the April, what is today? April 5th, 2013. Hey, we're going to be gaveling people in and out so we can accommodate our great representatives that are here. So I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill. Which one's Wisnitz?
Oh, 3315.
3315.
And he wanted to represent Witt here.
Oh, okay.
If we can hold off on those.
Okay, we close the public hearing on House Bill 3315, and we will open a public hearing on two bills at the same time, and then we're going to close it and open it on House Bill 3041. And I'm also going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 3042.
Chair Dorey, there he goes. It is Friday, so.
Yes.
Committee, thank you very much for allowing me to come before you and testify on this set of bills, actually. For the record, my name is Joe Gallegos. I represent House District 30, which is North Hillsboro, North Plains, and some of unincorporated Washington County. So we got two bills, actually, 3041 and 3042, both of which deal with the prevalent issue of wage inequity in Oregon. And if you're like me, we thought this had been taken care of a long time ago, but I'm not going to read. I just want to be brief and share with you some of the issues that these bills will address. For example, current law protects against wage discrimination based on sex. However, House Bill 3042 would extend protection to include race, color, religion, sexual orientation, national origin, marital status, disability, age. And you might be interested to know that a recent study shows that on the average, women make 78 cents for every dollar that men earn. And when we look at race, African-American women earn less than 68 cents per dollar. Hispanic women earn even less than that, 59 cents per dollar. So, I mean, this stuff is just continuing. I mean, like I said, I'm just amazed that this kind of discrimination continues. When employees perform work that is comparable in character and with comparable skill, they should be judged based on how well they do the job, not on other characteristics. But the starting reality is that employers, even in 2013, are denying a living wage to Oregonians, not because of poor work or lack of skill, but because of workers' race, sexual orientation, or other factors covered in these bills. Until we extend the coverage currently given to people based on gender, workers will not be adequately protected. So, colleagues, we need to make a statement of equity by passing these bills. These will enforce the idea that every Oregonian should be compensated fairly for the work that he or she does, plain and simple. We need to give BOLI, the Bureau of Labor and Industry, the teeth and ability to protect Oregonians and make our state a fair, attractive place to work and live. And I just want to share with you that, you know, after spending over 30 years as a professor teaching social work courses, I would say that 95-99% of my students were females. And it always fascinated me when I talk about oppression and talk about majority-minority status and recognize that women actually are in the majority in terms of numbers, but in terms of power, they're still an oppressed segment of our society. I mean, we know that people of color and people who are disabled, sexual minorities, we understand discrimination in those situations. But as I said, I was just amazed why the women in my class didn't just get up and tear their hair out or rally against the oppression. And oppression is just a fascinating kind of thing, the psychology of oppression. It just gets internalized and people participate in their own oppression. And so that's what we need to stop. It just isn't right. And so I hope you'll support these bills and give our Bureau and Labor Industry, the agency, the enforcement kind of power that it needs. So thank you.
Okay. Did you want to summarize the bills before we went on, or are you guys going to summarize them a little more, or?
It's pretty quick, Madam Chair, yeah. Committee members. 3042 prohibits discrimination against members of protected classes in the payment of wages for work of comparable character that requires comparable skill to perform. And House Bill 3041 prohibits discrimination or retaliation against employees who express concerns about wage inequity based on race. And it allows BOLI to enforce in the same manner that they enforce other unlawful employment practices.
Okay, thank you. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Deborah Boone, House District 32, the beautiful Upper Left Coast. And I'm here today in strong support of both House Bill 3041 and 32. I hope I'm getting this right. 3041 and 3042. I am today Representative Gallegos' wing girl, so winging it without notes. But I have been working on women's issues since the mid-60s, I have to say, probably about my freshman year in high school. When I went away to school, I was one of the first people to start the women's liberation movement at the University of Washington in the Hansie Hall lounge on a Sunday afternoon. And it was just because of issues like this, the inequality of pay for women in the day. And I was just doing a little math in my head, and it's been 43 years since we officially started to try to equalize that. It was 59 cents on the dollar. Now you say it's 78 cents. We haven't even made it a penny a year yet. So this is not good news for some of the younger people up there and some of our kids coming up. So I think that this is the kind of thing we can do, the action we can take in Oregon to equalize the playing field, so to speak, give BOLI the opportunities to have this tool in their toolkit when there is inequality. And as you all know, I'm working hard on getting an ERA amendment to our Constitution, which will also help this, and I think they'll help each other. But the important thing is that women have, and to address Representative Gallegos' comment about why aren't these women jumping up and tearing their hair out, well, we did, and it's been 43 years, and I kind of gave up after about 20. And so I think this is an opportunity. When I saw these bills, I signed on to them, and I hope that you agree that they're a good policy to make and pass them out today and help equal this playing field a little bit for our women. Thank you. And the other class, protected classes.
Thank you very much. Any questions of the panelists? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
For your testimony. We're going to temporarily close the public hearings on House Bill 3041 and 3042 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 3315. Representatives Witt and Wisnett, the end of the alphabet.
Oh, is it the this is the Gun Rights Committee, right? Thank you. Madam Chair, good morning.
Okay, go ahead.
And honorable colleagues, for the record, I'm Representative Gene Wisnett, Sun River. And I'm proud to bring you this bill today, along with my friend here, Representative Brad Witt. I think it's important, and I hope that the committee will consider this bill and move it forward. This bill addresses abuses. It doesn't eliminate the H-2B visa program, but it addresses abuses which have prevented employment of Oregonians, and you're going to hear testimony to that effect by other people. To help you have some background, because this is a complicated issue, I provided members of the committee with a copy of the October 20, 2011 Oregonian article titled Federal Stimulus Money for Oregon Jobs Hired Foreign Workers. And my colleague will also talk a little bit about that, I think. Also, I provide you a copy of a press release, because as I got into this, I discovered it's really a federal issue that there's limited what we can do in Oregon, but we're going to talk about what Oregon can do. You have a press release from Congressman DeFazio describing action by him and Senator Merkley introducing legislation to reform the temporary visa program. You also have a letter from the Oregon Employment Director, Warner, after I requested her assistance on this issue, and we had meetings with her and the governor's staff, Duke Shepherd, on this issue. The Employment Department has been very responsive, and you have a copy of their letter to me as a result of my request and those meetings describing what the Employment Department will do. And that's what I want to be sure we're not, this is not against the Employment Department. However, we have no Oregon legislation addressing this issue. Thus, Representative Witt and I have submitted House Bill 3315, which formalizes Director Warner's commitment. The employment offices will testify, and they have some changes, which I'll be glad to accept, so it doesn't put more work on them, and hopefully then there'll be no financial impact on the bill, which may assure its success, or help assure its success if this committee moves it. It is a necessary bill, I believe, to demonstrate the Oregon's legislature's commitment and executive branch commitment to support Oregon workers. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Representative West.
Good morning, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. State Representative Brad Witt from Oregon's House District 31 appearing before you this morning in support of House Bill 3315. This is a bill that is a response to the unscrupulous practices of a few labor brokers, brokers who have used every tactic imaginable to avoid meeting their legal obligations to hire local unemployed workers when conducting forest restoration projects with federal stimulus money. In and around Representative Wisnant's district, 254 foreign workers were employed during times of record unemployment in Oregon, at times when the project that they were employed in was intended specifically to employ locally unemployed workers, when job openings in other fields were receiving tens, if not hundreds, of applications per job. Not a single Oregonian was hired for these projects. Not one. House Bill 3315, as amended, would have Oregon's Employment Department place public notices, legitimate, bona fide public notices, informing the public that these jobs are available, number one, and secondly, they would the Oregon's Employment Department has expressed its willingness to inform the United States Department of Labor when and if they discover future violations like the ones that have occurred repeatedly in Representative Wisnant's district. With that, I urge the committee's favorable action on House Bill 3315.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions of the panelists? Representative Kinnamer.
Were these companies also out of state, or are they within the state
the that state
did this? And then also, where did these workers come from?
It's our understanding that the companies were local Oregon companies. I don't know exactly that where they were when you apply for the H-2B or you use the H-2B visa. A lot of them are from our neighbors in the South.
Madam Chair, Representative Kinnamer, one of the tactics that these brokers were using, no ads for jobs or public notices were placed in the state of Oregon, nowhere. The ads were placed in every far-off state that you could possibly imagine. So technically, To the letter of the law, the letter of the law was met. An ad had been placed in Arizona for a job in Oregon that was going to take place 4 months down the road.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I have a question, please. Thank you. And what kind of wages did they pay?
Over $20 an hour. Madam Chair and Vice Chair Kinnerman. It's my understanding they're well over $20 an hour jobs.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Good job.
We'll continue with this hearing. We have two other people signed up, Bill Cludine and Jim Booker.
It's just such a shock. I wasn't really aware of this.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. For the record, Madam Chair, Vice Chair of Committee, Bill Cludine, Carpenters Industrial Council. We've worked a long time on this bill. I personally want to thank Representative Wisnett and Representative Whip for sponsoring this bill and bring it forward. This bill is trying to close a loophole that's been used for years. May I quote from the U.S. Department of Labor website? Quote, a company can recruit foreign workers if it proves they aren't unemployed U.S. citizens available to do the jobs and that bringing in workers won't damage wages or working conditions for U.S. workers. That's a quote. These companies, and there's four that's really at the top of this list. As was stated, they do not advertise in Oregon newspapers. Three of them never even advertised, period. One run an ad in the east slope of the Rocky Mountains in a town of 3,000. They run it for 2 days in the newspaper. And we're talking hundreds of workers lost out. A dollar amount. Part of this was stimulus money, which give the U.S. Forest Service the right to ignore the low bid and accept the higher bids of the local people, the local contractors. Now, I can guarantee you the Association of Oregon Loggers had members in that area. They were family-owned businesses in that area that could have done these jobs. And ironically, I spoke personally with the director of that district, U.S. Forest Service, and let her know that she could ignore the low bids and accept the higher bids of the locals. And this was in front of a vast room of people. She chose to ignore that. $13 million worth of stimulus money just in the last few years Oregon could have had in Central Oregon. These contractors know ahead of time when these jobs are coming up. They know ahead of time they're not going to advertise for local help. They're not going to have to pay the common wage in that area. What they do, they immediately apply for the visas, the foreign visas. They bring these people in from Latin America. Now, this isn't an immigration issue. This is just a foreign worker issue. They bring them in through the southern states, example, the state of Mississippi. They bring them in through there, and that's where they establish the wage for these folks. And we all know what the minimum wage is in the state of Mississippi. And this is how they get these bids. Knowing ahead of time that the labor cost is almost nil for these people, they know they're going to get these contracts. As stated, Senator Wyden, Merkley, Congressman DeFazio, Schrader was on top of this. We went to them. We begged for help. Each one of them tried to work with the U.S. Department of Labor, and still we do not have a response on how they can fix this problem. This is the purpose of this bill. We're asking the Oregon Department of Employment to step in and help. We know it's going to create a little extra work. We're willing to work with the Department of Employment. They have some dashes, that they want to enter, and I've looked at it, and to move this bill forward, to get this thing going, to get it passed, we're willing to work with it and accept the new dash. We're willing to do anything to get close this loophole. Again, thank you for this hearing, and hope we can move this bill forward. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Walker.
Representative Doherty, Chair Doherty, and Vice Chair Knorr, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Jim Booker. I'm the Federal Programs Manager for the Employment Department. I want to let you know that Oregon Employment Department is committed to getting Oregon workers these kinds of jobs. Part of what we're going to do that and what we do currently do is we search for these jobs and we make sure that when we find them that they are posted publicly. And we're going to redouble those efforts to make sure that people are very aware, particularly the workers, by sharing these jobs with local union halls, with community partners, making sure that they're published in places where they're very easy to see. We're also working with employers to make sure that they understand their responsibilities under the regulations of the temporary foreign worker programs that they may be accessing, as well as making sure that they're very aware of the Oregon workers that are available in their area. Besides that, we are working with Representative Wisnant on Section 2 of the bill to clarify the department's role in referring non-compliant employers to the appropriate federal enforcement agencies without jeopardizing the federal funds the department receives that have limitations on their use. That's the end of my testimony, unless there are any questions.
You're fine. Any questions of the panelists? Mr. Kenemer, then Mr. Olvey.
Thank you. How much help will this bill be in closing this loophole?
Chair Doherty and Vice Chair Kenemer and members of the committee, I believe it will help quite a bit. It solidifies, the regulations aren't real clear on what you have to do, and this gives us just real clear direction on what we're doing. We're happy to do these things.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Holden.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the sponsors of the bill as well. I've had some experience in seeing workers with H-1B visas coming in and taking jobs in a particular area, and I've seen it in the forestry replanting reforestation arenas, but also in the construction industry. And you know, one of the things, and I've talked to many people. Got it from some of the foreign workers, you know, when we refer to the federal wage of $20 an hour because of these labor broker situations where you have a lot of foreign workers who oftentimes don't speak English and don't understand labor laws, they're actually not getting that $20 an hour. The labor broker's getting credit for the $20 an hour for all the people, and it's very difficult to find out what the actual worker is actually getting. So not only are perhaps these jobs supposed to be going to, you know, people in Oregon that are available to take this work, but the wage and hour laws are being broken, and those foreign workers are not getting what they're supposed to be getting under our own laws. And so it's very difficult to document that and figure it out, and the federal government has been a problem in trying to deal with this in the past. There just doesn't seem to be any enforcement at the federal level. So I applaud the efforts in this bill.
Thank you. Okay, any other questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Those were the last people signed up. Anybody else wants to speak on this issue? Okay, seeing none, I close the public hearing on House Bill 3315 and reopen the public hearing on 3041 and House Bill 3042. Okay, thank you. About Lily Hogue, Matt Swanson, Alana Guinea.
Thank you.
Hi. Excuse me. Good morning, Chair Doherty and committee members. My name is Lily Hogue. I'm the Policy Director for Family Forward Oregon. We're here today supporting House Bills 3041 and 3042. Just to reiterate, women nationally make 77 cents per dollar that men make. But the situation is much worse for African-American women and for Latina women. African-American women are paid 64 cents on the dollar for a male, and Latina women are make just 55 cents on the dollar of every man in our country. In Oregon, the situation is a little bit better. Women make 78 cents on the dollar. That's losing about 10 grand a year. Actually, next week, next Tuesday, is Equal Pay Day, the day in which women make the exact same amount as men did in the calendar year of 2012. So while we find that quite disappointing, we're really excited about these bills. And I guess I'd like to take it from a little bit of a different angle, which is that, of course, these extend rights to a group of people who really need them. And we think that the intersection of race and gender is very important, and that protecting different classes, not just sex, will actually help larger groups of women who need that support. We also see this as, of course, a very important economic issue. Nationally, 40% of households are now led by female breadwinners. When they're making about 23% less than men, that's very serious. That hurts our economy. It hurts our families. And women, families who are relying solely on mothers' income, what we also know is that mothers make 60 cents to every dollar that fathers make. These bills are really important. We urge you to pass them. If we continue going at the current rate, women will not catch up to men for another 50 years. Those figures are worse for African American and Latino women. And we'd love to see those protected classes expanded. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Matt Swanson. I'm here with the Service Employees International Union. We're also speaking out in favor of House Bill 3041 and 3042. Rather than, I think, review the statistics that I'm sure many of my other supporters will talk about, I want to talk about a very important impact that the wage gap has over time, which is the impact on retirement. So imagine if over your lifetime you're making 23% less and how that compounds as you age. What this means is that for certain classes of worker, they're having to work further into their golden years. They're retiring with less. And of course, in the case of women, we know that they'll live longer. So the likelihood that a woman will outlive her retirement is greatly increased by that wage gap, right? So I think something that we really want to focus on here is that it also means that you're going to run into cases of age discrimination or just challenges with what do we do with an aging workforce that obviously has an impact. So I think getting these bills passed and addressing these issues moving forward will greatly improve the lot of those who are currently faced with retiring into poverty. And I think an important piece to think about there is if you look at a recent study from the Economic Policy Institute of the lowest quartile, so the lowest quarter of income earners in retirement, women represent about 8 in 10 of that group, while they are 57% of all retirees. So as you see that women end up being much more likely to live in poverty in retirement, they're going to be working longer. So either discrimination based on age, which we know has become a larger problem, and our friends at AARP have many statistics on, I think can talk about, but also just that we need to reverse this trend, and I think this bill puts us in the right direction. Then, of course, the intersection of how race comes into play. So we know women of color are much more likely to end up retiring into poverty, and I think just that dual impact of what that means for our workforce and just what it means for the strain on services is important. So that's our reason for supporting this, and we definitely look forward to passing this legislation.
Thank you, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ilana Guinea. I'm here on behalf of the 250,000 members of the Oregon AFL-CIO. You know, this committee, more than many others in this building, is asked to do a lot for Oregonians.
You're asked to extend rights. You're asked to extend protections. You're asked to make life a little more manageable for Oregonians. And I know there's a lot to take in and a lot to decide between and a lot to choose how you prioritize. And I think this is something that should be easy. This is something that should be easy. We already at the state and federal level have protections in law for equal pay for women. They don't do enough. They're not strong enough. As you've heard, we haven't caught up yet. And we have protections in law for various protected classes against discrimination in general. What we don't do, though, is say that for those other protected classes, that discrimination protection should extend to pay equity. We don't say anywhere that while we may have protections against discrimination for hiring and firing based on your age, that your age also shouldn't determine how much you get paid for doing equivalent work with equivalent skills and an equivalent background to somebody of a different age. And I'm not sure why we don't do that already, but given that we've got laws protecting these people and given that we've got laws addressing pay equity, I hope that this is an easy vote. I hope that this is something where we can say we need to be putting these things together and extending these protections across the board to everybody. I'm not going to repeat the statistics that you've heard about women of color making less than white men. Men of color make less than white men as well. Gender comes into play a lot. People with disabilities are across the board discriminated against in pay. I'm not sure why we assume that because you have a disability, you don't need to make as much money, but housing costs the same whether or not you have a disability. Food costs the same whether or not you have a disability. You're not better off in any other way. So I hope that this is something that we can take on this session. I hope this is a place where we can make life easier for a few Oregonians and make life a little better, and I encourage you to support this bill.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions? Just kind of a comment. I've been, other than when I was in college and working for a large retailer that used to split Variety and Grocery, because Variety was all women and Grocery all men, and the men made $3.50 an hour more than the women did, I've been blessed. I've always been in a profession where there's been equal pay. Up until the point of I worked in education, that we used to set teacher salaries on your education and years of experience. But we used to have what they call a bachelor's block. And you could have a bachelor's plus 105 credit hours past a bachelor's, and you were stuck at a bachelor's in the middle of the salary schedule. 90% of those people were women. You had to have a master's degree to teach secondary. That was the law in the state of Oregon. That has now changed. And so we went through and worked to make sure we didn't no longer have that bachelor's barrier. You'd have a master's and a bachelor plus 45, master's plus 45. Mm-hmm. And so it was all the way across, and we were able to get the elementary teachers, which were basically female, the same pay as many of their male counterparts on the high school level. So it's something that it's unfortunate you still have to work on, but I appreciate you guys bringing this to it because, as I say, I've other than in my real younger years, have never had to face a profession where men and women did not make the same thing. So, anyway, any other comments, questions? Thank you very much. Representative Frederick's here, so how about Representative Frederick's and Elizabeth Kushwa? And then we'll have JL, and then we'll finish up the panels. Would you like to come up too? Yeah. And Marcia, you have, and Marcia Kelly.
Come up after these two. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good morning, Chair Daugherty and members of the committee. I thank you again for letting me come before you. I'm Lou Frederick, State Representative for North and Northeast Portland District 43. I'm going to start off this in just a little bit because you heard quite a bit. Some of you know that I have a background in theater, and so does Representative Daugherty. If she remembers that the Greek chorus was constantly moving around the stage, often saying the same kind of thing, well, you're going to hear I'm part of that chorus today. The fact is we have a very simple concept here. Why we allow discrimination based on certain factors is often amazes me and surprises me. I've seen the evolution of change on this particular issue. I hope we continue to change it. I said before this committee the other day, and I'll say it again. Every time, I'm just surprised that we continue to see that discrimination has a constituency of any form. We still have that. We need to address it, and I hope that you do just that with these two bills. Very simple. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Kushwa.
Good morning, Chair Daugherty, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Elizabeth Kushwa. I'm the Legislative Director for the Bureau of Labor and Industries. Bowie has a four-point mission statement, and the first point of that mission is important for you to hear: to protect the rights of workers and citizens through equal, non-discriminatory treatment through the enforcement of anti-discrimination laws that apply to workplaces, housing, and public accommodations. This bill, House Bill 3042, extends the Equal Pay Act of 1963, which is part of the Federal Fair Labor Standards Act. It says that it prohibits sex-based wage discrimination between men and women in the same establishment who perform jobs that require substantially equal skill, effort, and responsibility under similar working conditions. Makes a lot of sense that we extend that to everyone in the protected classes, apart from gender. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Any questions, the panelists? Representative Widener.
This is for you, Elizabeth. Would that even pertain to educational experience? So two people doing the same job, but one has a higher education, like the representative or the chair was talking about earlier, but they're doing the same job, they should get the same pay?
Representative Daugherty, Representative Widener, level of education isn't part of 659A in protected class, so an employer would be able to choose an internal policy based on education if that's what it was. If they were the same job, the same responsibilities, I would assume it would be the same pay.
May I follow up?
Mm-hmm.
Do we have a situation where, or as Bowley had a lot of complaints, where there's people doing the same job, same skill level, and they're being paid different because one's a man, one's a woman, or one's white, one's black? Are you getting complaints like that at Bowley at all?
Chair Daugherty, Representative Widener, I can get you the figures on those complaints that we do get. It's proven that men and women aren't making equal amounts of money. It's proven that people of color do not make the same amount of money as white people. But I'll be happy to give you our figures for any of those.
I'm referring to the same job. So you and I are both flipping burgers, but I make more than you flipping a burger. That's what I'm looking at, hourly pay there for like work, like jobs, and like education.
Chair, Representative Widener, I'll be happy to get you that information if we have it.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Representative Kennerman?
I guess I'm wondering, how much will these bills give you in the way of an additional authority that you don't currently have on these issues?
Chair Daugherty, Representative Kennerman, it doesn't give us additional authority.
But
we have the authority as it is now.
Okay.
It gives a different avenue for the claimant.
Follow up, please. Can you explain that then, please?
Chair Representative Kanemer, House Bill 3041, for example, Bowley believes is probably already covered under the whistleblowing statute of 659A.
Sort of was my
However, point. Sorry, 3042 does give a statutory expansion of the Equal Pay Act.
Okay, so it is statutory. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Wilson, Mr. Tolson. And then we'll end up with Mary Bodkin and Marcia Kelly.
Thank you, Chair Daugherty and members of the committee. For the record, I'm J.L. Wilson with Associated Oregon Industries. I'm going to take these in order with 3041 and talk about the policy because it hasn't been discussed yet. House Bill 3041 talks about discrimination and retaliation for employees who have expressed concerns about wages based on sex. And I'm going to break this law down into two parts. The first part is the retaliation piece. Okay, this is a second layer of redundancy with regard to retaliation. In other words, this would be the third law on the books addressing the exact same thing. 659A030 prohibits an employer from discriminating against any person because that person opposes an unlawful practice. Okay, so there's number one. Number two was adopted in the 2009 session, and it's embodied in 659A199, which is essentially the whistleblowing statute, which is the second general statute under which this concern in 3041 would be actionable. So this bill, House Bill 3041, would be the third statute in which this conduct is actionable. And in addition, this bill does not provide any new remedies or source of additional rights. So it's completely redundant in that respect. Okay, I'm going to set that part aside and talk about this issue of expressing concerns, because that is a somewhat novel concept in this bill. But the one thing this committee needs to know, and I hope the proponents even know, is expressing concerns about wages is already considered what's termed oppositional activity, which is already covered under 659A030. And it's covered in federal law because it's considered an internal complaint. So the expression of concerns about wages in a review process would be in your fear of retaliation or discrimination based on that expression of concern about wages in a review process is already actionable under state and federal law. So what is novel about this bill as it relates to current law is this kind of this nebulous term about expresses concerns about wages, wage inequality based on sex. And because we've already covered expression of wage concerns to an employer, you know, is covered under oppositional activity or an internal complaint under federal law. Now, I guess if the intent of the bill is what I think it is, then they're already covered, unless we're trying to expand what expressing concerns is into, I guess, what I would say water cooler talk, musings in the workplace, stuff like I don't get paid enough for this, or they don't pay me enough to do this job, or stuff like that. I guess is the intent of the bill to make that actionable? I don't think so, but I do want to allay proponents' concerns that what I think they're trying to get at is already actionable under state and federal law. But, and as a second, just a finer point to this, most unlawful employment practice acts say an employer can't do a certain thing. I can't discriminate or retaliate against you in this way. Usually it's in terms of compensation terms or conditions of employment. There is no such limitation in House Bill 3041. So what constitutes retaliation is really in the eye of the beholder in this bill, and that's just a fine point, because I think the larger points are, but again, that's just a finer point in this bill that I want to address. On House Bill 3042, I also want to make it clear to the proponents and this committee that discrimination in wages based on protected class is already illegal under 659A0301B. And I put it right in the written testimony, and I'll read it for you. It's an unlawful employment practice, and then it lists all the protected classes, to discriminate against the individual in compensation or in terms, conditions, or privileges of employment. It is already actionable today, and let me tell you, the penalties are significant. If you prove this claim, we're talking 2 years of back pay, attorney's fees. I mean, this is covered in this statute, and it's also covered as recourse through BOLI. You can take this through the BOLI Civil Rights Division and get the same thing that House Bill 3042 asks for. Now, I'll tell you the difference, and it's the difference between a 659-030 lawsuit and a lawsuit through 652, which is what this proposes. What this in essence does is it shifts, it lowers the bar for proof of liability, and it shifts the burden from employee to employer. Under a 659-030 lawsuit, discrimination based on wages for protected class, you have to prove discriminatory intent of the employer. That is the kind of the bar that has to be crossed. An employer is also entitled to assert a claim of a legitimate business reason for the differential in pay. Okay, that's sort of the framework of the 659-030. What 652 contemplates is something different. It's more of a strict liability, no fault. And the logic is because I'm a member of a protected class and I'm doing the same job and there is a disparity in pay, by definition, there is discrimination that needs to be remedied. And that's what House Bill 3042 essentially proposes, is going to more of a strict liability system as opposed to what's in place today, which is I have to prove discriminatory intent and the employer gets to assert a legitimate business reason. An employer does not get to assert a legitimate business reason under an ORS 652 lawsuit. Now, I'm just going to wind up by saying this. The Equal Pay Act was implemented federally in 1963. I don't remember when the Oregon statute was, but it was meant to reverse systemic endemic discrimination in the workplace. You might be able to say that about some protected classes, but I know you can't say that about all protected classes that are in House Bill 3042. Talking about marital status or perhaps age. I mean, one outcome of this issue, or 3042, that I think would be sort of a perverse outcome, that you would not, but yet the field would be wide open for something like this, would be a situation where a younger worker files a discrimination claim under House Bill 3042 because they don't get the same wages as an older worker does. Well, as you or I know through practical experience, sometimes differentials in pay are, higher pay for older workers is basically a proxy for experience, on-the-job experience and seniority. And yet that might very well be an actionable claim under House Bill 3042. So it's just to show there are layers of this onion and that you might not want to peel. And the reality is these claims are already actionable in the workplace today, and I'm talking discrimination on wages based on protected class under 659A030. We feel the burden of proof is significant and I would say appropriate, and we feel that the employer defenses are appropriate, and I'm going to end my testimony with that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Ian?
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Ian Tollison, representing Oregon Farm Bureau. I'll just start off with that, we don't condone discrimination of any type. We feel that the spirit of the bill is worthwhile, but as JL articulated extremely well, this is a redundant bill for protections that are already existing. With the statutes already there, we believe this opens up a third cause of action to litigate. Employers are already, trying to hire as many people as they can. Our farmers operate on a fairly low margin of profit, and that's just going to eat into that and could lower the ability to hire more employees. So I won't go into further detail. JL did a wonderful job, and we support his comments and oppose both bills. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions of the panelists? Okay, lawyers.
I was actually going to ask this at the last panel, but I didn't get a chance to, because I am also struggling with seeing how this is different than existing law. And I think I would even disagree, Mr. Wilson, with you in saying that it's even a higher burden, because as I read it, it just does feel redundant to me. An employer may not discriminate against an employee, blah, 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 on the basis of protected class. So I still think that an employer, at least as I read this, an employer could still discriminate in pay on the basis of experience or education or other reasons. They just can't discriminate on the basis of one of these protected classes. But that then begs the question about if this is just a redundant statute that is already covered under 659A, but the two parts that are clearly not redundant that actually the proponents did not talk about either, if you want to comment on sections B and C, I'm not at least aware of current law requiring, or excuse me, prohibiting discrimination on the basis of membership of a person with whom the employee associates is a protected class. That's, to me, broader than current law. And then also, employee having a juvenile record that has been expunged are two kind of additional categories that are added under here. Those are the part, to me, that feel...
Which bill are you speaking to?
I'm sorry. I keep saying the bill.
Yeah.
3042.
Thank you.
Sorry. Yeah, I should have been clear about that.
Okay.
So subsection 1A, I think I tend to agree, at least certainly the proponents could come up and talk again, but that feels redundant to me under current law. Sections B and C seem to be a broadening. I didn't know if you guys wanted to comment on those sections.
I will. Representative Dorian, Representative Fagan, I would just take you back to 659A0301B, which talks about the protected class or of any person with whom the individual associates or because of an individual's juvenile record that has been expunged pursuant to the statutory references. So,
I didn't look at 659A, did I? Thanks.
I just have a comment. If anything JL said is factually inaccurate, I would love to hear about it because I think your facts are, I think they're correct. I think your hypotheticals are not far-fetched, and I think you make a series of fairly legitimate points as to how this changes or does not change law. So again, if anything JL said is inaccurate or unreasonable, I'd love to hear it.
Well, I'll just get out of
yeah. Would you please critique your material? I appreciate that.
Do you want to respond to that?
I think you should
JL,
sit down.
I just
down.
Got a phone call. Your mother's outside, and she's not signed up to testify.
Yeah.
Any other questions or comments of the panel?
That was good.
Inaccurate, at least on this bill.
Thank you very much.
It's never been inaccurate. Give me a break.
Okay, Mary Botkin and Marcia Kelly, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Mary Botkin, and I'm here this morning representing AFSCME, but I want to sort of step back, okay? And let's just talk about the problem of sort of wages in the workplace and where women fit into the broader categories. And instead of talking about just discrimination, let's sort of talk about inequities. And the first thing I want to do is I want to say there's a difference between equal pay for equal work and comparable worth. And if we start by understanding that very basic difference, then I think that we can have a different kind of a discussion. Equal pay for equal work is very simple. You and I are doing the same job. You're a guy, I'm a gal. I get paid the same as you do. If I don't, the employer's wrong. I can sue the employer, I can get back wages, and I can make the employer continue to pay me what I'm worth, and they don't get to fire me because I complained about it and filed a suit and got paid. Pretty simple stuff.
And you can currently do that.
Yes. Okay?
Excuse me.
Comparable worth is a whole different animal. It is comparing jobs that are different, fundamentally different. It's comparing the janitor to the secretary. It's comparing the president of the university to a tenured professor. It is saying, are there inherent wage discriminations based on gender, not based on anything else, but based equal jobs that are of equal value to the employer and have equal skills and ability, even though the jobs may be fundamentally different. I was privileged or cursed, depending upon your view, to sit on the first pay equity committee chaired by Senator Margie Hendrickson in the 80s that did and oversaw the Hayes study, which established the pay equity policies for the state of Oregon. It was both the most challenging and the most interesting thing I've probably ever done, just because you had to learn so much about very disparate studies and how to compare very unequal data. We did eventually come up with a policy that said we are going to end wage-based discrimination or gender-based wage discrimination in the workplace for the state of Oregon. There was a one-time settlement made by the legislature. Not a settlement, but they appropriated $20 million to start the process of ending gender-based wage discrimination. It did not resolve the whole issue, but it certainly made a good step forward. I think where we failed, and I say we on this side of the dais, not on your side, maybe you get some of the blame too, but not you individually, we didn't continue to appropriate money to continue to fund the end and to take a look at those classes and continue to fund dollars to end that disparity. I think that we need to address that. But I think it is a huge discussion that we need to have about what our commitment is to sort of ending that inherent and systemic problem that we have with job classifications that are female-dominated that continue to be undervalued. You know, I don't know what the answer to this is. I know that I sit on the commission's, Boley's commission on the Oregon Council of Civil Rights. It is one of the commissioner's top priorities is to end wage discrimination. You know, I think that when you look at discrimination based on racial issues, that is easier to tackle, though not easy by any means, but easier because the data is there for us to look at, and it's pretty empirical data that you can look at. It's easy to understand. This is a dollar issue. And once people make the commitment that they want to end this practice, then it's a matter of how many dollars do we have to spend to end it. And that's where the challenge comes, is how many dollars are we willing to spend to end that discrimination once we've identified it. And if the discrimination exists in the workplace, I do think that there is some legal options available through Boley. And I think that we should take a look at how do we end long-term systemic sex-based wage discrimination, because women of color will never gain equality until they have economic equality. I served on the Democratic National Committee as the chair of the Women's Committee during the Clinton presidency, and as chair, I will tell you that I opened every meeting with, you know, the sign of the end of discrimination for women is when we are willing to write checks to our favorite candidate, regardless of their party, that are equal to what we will pay for a new dress or a pair of shoes. And, you know, until we are willing to add zeros to the end of the money that we spend now, you know, we're going to continue to suffer some discrimination. And, you know, we really do have to figure out how women fit into this equation. And when I look at this hearing room that is almost empty, I would say, sisters, we got a hell of a long ways to go. Thank you.
Thank you. But you haven't picked up a penny in the past 12 years.
I was going to say, you know, I still have my original 59-cent button.
Yeah. I do, too. Thank you.
Chair Doherty and members of the committee, my name is Marcia Kelly, and I'm the public policy advocate for the American Association of University Women. Other people have said some of the same things that I would say, but I will take you back a little bit into history of AUW and our predecessor organization. I have to get this right because I'm used to AUW. The Association of Collegiate Alumni, as AUW was known, started in 1881 to improve the status of educated women in the United States. And in 1894, 119 years ago, that organization collaborated with the Massachusetts Bureau of Statistics of Labor to analyze the pay of college-educated women. There was a report which included firsthand accounts of women's work experiences at the time and the inequities. When I was doing office work, I received $6 a week and kept the books and was a typist, too. If a man had been employed for this work, his pay would have been $15 a week, and he would have not been required to perform the general office work. He would have been a professional bookkeeper, however, which I was not. One of our founders of AUW was the first woman instructor at MIT. She was not allowed to receive her PhD because it wasn't appropriate for a woman. They now have a building named after her.
Could you make sure that you talk about the bill on this?
We're talking about pay equity and the amount of time that we have been working on this issue. We're still at 77 cents on the dollar. You can go to AUW's website, AUW.org, and look at a copy of our latest research statistics regarding the pay inequities of college-educated women. I think anything that we can do to raise this issue and provide easier means of achieving pay equity for women is good for society in the long run. The issue of pensions, the issue of living longer, the issue of not being a burden to society by having to help women live in their later lives is all tied in to pay equity. Oregon has, on the national level, been...
I'm going to ask you to summarize your testimony. It's going later than I thought it was going to. I'm sorry, but if you could...
Oregon's been very active in this. Wayne Morris, Republican, in 1945, was one of the sponsors of a pay equity bill. We need pay equity. You can look at the research. AUW is doing its part. We teach women how to negotiate. But even when we graduate, we still have a pay gap. And having more ways of closing that pay gap without as much expense as full-blown court trials would be very helpful.
Thank you very much.
Thank
Any
you.
Questions of the panelists?
Yeah, I do have a question, Madam Chair. Not Mr. Chair. I'm sorry. Going for the, maybe I should go for a gender-neutral title. However, I was just thinking during your testimony, both of you, I was thinking of the teachers and the step pay, actually, that I'm not sure if that's the right term. I get confused over what pay title to give it. But if they increase their skills, go and get a advanced degree or whatever, they'll get a corresponding pay, even though really the underlying skills required to teach, at least from a layman's point of view, haven't really changed. You're still teaching a class or several classes, whatever. They're still doing this work, but they're getting a raise once they expand their, or increase their skills a bit. So how would you compare when you're doing the same work, but maybe somebody has a, I guess, a more applicable education? I mean, how would you determine that? Would that be considered job discrimination if one person had better skills or had the same skills as this person, but this person had an advanced degree? Would that be considered discrimination if one was paid more than the other?
I think there are reasons, there are legitimate reasons for pay disparity that do not necessarily equate to discrimination.
So, you know, when you talk about the worker that's been there 15 years as opposed to the one that's been there 2 and the one that's been there 15 years gets paid more than the one that's been there for 2, I think that there is going to be pay disparity that is not equivalent to discrimination necessarily. It is when they've both been there 15 years and they're both doing the same job. They both have sort of equal skills and ability, but one's a female and one's a male, and the male makes more. That would equate, in my opinion, not my non-lawyer opinion, that would be sort of a prima facie case for me that there is discrimination there.
Well, I guess, Madam Chair, I guess under a different scenario, let's just say there are 2 employees. The man happens to have the higher degree or whatever. The woman does not. They've done similar type things. This person has actually been able to apply their degree, perhaps, to an extent where this person would not be able to. Would that be considered prima facie evidence of disparity or discrimination other than just, you know? I don't know. It just seems like sometimes it's in the eye of the beholder, and I'm just concerned that maybe a person who maybe not as qualified as a person who happens to be male would feel or interpret it as discrimination because they're not getting paid as much, even though they don't have quite the skill set.
Representative Thatcher, you're adding the college degree scenario in there, and I would say that if the person has a higher degree of education, even though there's disparity, there may not be discrimination. I'd have to look at the whole case.
And
you know,
you're non-lawyer, whatever. And Chair, we're going to need to wrap this up. Go ahead, please.
Chair Doherty, Representative Thatcher, AUW's research takes out all of those variables, and it still has found that college-educated women with the same number of hours, with the same degree, are still across the board about 82 cents on the dollar for males. So the research that AUW does takes out all of those things talking about the pay gap and is utilized by quite a few organizations.
I would love to talk more, maybe offline. Thank you.
Good, real quick, because Representative Thatcher is kind of hitting on something here, because this body's already taken up the process of throwing degrees out and basically looking at like work, like skills, so nurse practitioner, doctor, things like that, we've decided equal pay there. And you can do that even in the education world where someone may have 18 years experience in the classroom but has been an assistant versus a new teacher coming in with the degree, and they're being discriminated against because the person with the degree is getting more money even though this person might know more on handling the classroom. And this is kind of where this body's been going, and I don't know what your thoughts are on that, Mary, if you think that's something.
You know, I find myself wishing that Amy Clare, who's the civil rights director for Boley, was here. I mean, she handles these cases. She does the investigations. You know, I am not, I don't do this every day anymore, so.
Maybe we can bring her later on a follow-up.
I mean, I think she could answer a lot of these questions sort of off the top of her head. She could probably give you a better idea of what kind of cases she's seen that come forward. And I just think that there are people who are certified smart in this area, and maybe we are not some of them.
Okay. We'll bring them in.
Just a comment to kind of, because the water seemed to be getting a little bit muddied with kind of hypotheticals. Still, under this bill, as under existing law, the disparity in pay would have to be on the basis of them being a member of the protected class.
Right.
So if someone has much more experience or skill set,
right,
those are not illegal, because that's the basis of the pay disparity, is more experience or a greater skill set. All that would be illegal under current law and this law, and I agree with Representative Barton, I'm not clear on how it's different, but just to be clear, all these hypotheticals would be very legitimate business purposes, because the disparity in pay would not be on the basis of gender or sexual orientation or the other reasons in the protected class. So
Madam Chair, just let me just say this one thing.
Real quickly.
It's always good to have these discussions. And I want to thank the representative for bringing these bills forward, because I think it's important for us to review where we are, where we're going, and if we're getting there fast enough, or if we need to do things differently, and if we need to add protected classes, and if we need to add more meat to the law. So I appreciate that the representative brought these bills forward, and we'll support them based on the efforts that he's making.
Okay. And we'll talk to the Employment Division, or Bowley, to see if we can have a civil rights person come in. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I also like to note for the record that testimony in support of 3042 was received from the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association. Okay. That's the last person we have on the sign-up sheet for this one, so I'm going to close public hearing on House Bills 3041 and 3042 and open up a public session, public hearing on House Bill 2540. Representative Colby.
Good morning, Madam Chair. If I could have Craig Smith from the Construction Contractors Board join me.
Yes. Craig Smith, yes. And then the other person also signed up is Bradley Cook.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you about House Bill 2540. House Bill 2540 deals with construction contractor licensing, essentially. And it is, as you know, I've worked a lot in the area of trying to get compliance with our laws in the world of construction, and especially in terms of payroll issues and wages and licensing. There's been a lot of things that I've heard about and actually have seen in the construction world, and cash payments are actually one of those issues. And so House Bill 2540 deals with trying to get compliance with some of our laws that protect workers and also protect legitimate contractors who pay according to the law. So House Bill 2540 has two specific pieces in it, and then there's a dash one amendment that I'll let from the Construction Contractors Board, and I'll let them speak to the dash one amendment as well. So essentially, what the scenario that I'm looking at here in section two of the bill is specifically around the issue where a contractor can actually benefit by being able to pay somebody in cash and paying them less than what most workers would work for, because that particular worker happens to have some orders against his wages in terms of garnishment, or whether that's child support or any other sorts of obligations that have a claim against his wages, some sort of judgment or garnishment. Alimony is another one. And it's very difficult to rein in this particular arena. And one of the things that happens is a spouse, for example, can find their ex-husband working somewhere and knows where they're working, but has very little ability to, you know, get their child support or anything else. And same with other sorts of garnishment. And the reason is because the person's being paid off the books. And it's not illegal to be paid in cash. And I'm not saying that, at least I don't think it is, somebody may correct me about that, though, but it is illegal not to pay your taxes and have workers' comp and unemployment insurance and other things if you're an employee taking out of your wages. And it's also illegal to illegally dodge these obligations as garnishments and judgments that are placed on people for a good reason. Section 2 of this bill does is essentially say that a construction contractors board, if in fact they discover that a contractor is engaged in enabling somebody through the dishonesty of providing false information to enable somebody to evade these obligations, that the Construction Contractors Board would have the ability to revoke, suspend, or refuse to issue another license like they do for other types of issues. The next part of the bill, the other thing that this bill does is that it adds to the definition of construction debt the unpaid wages for employees. Currently, the construction debt Mr. Smith may chime in on this to help me out, but currently the construction debt is mostly about materials that somebody has bought and not paid for, so that would be a construction debt. But the wages to the employees are not considered construction debt for a construction contractor, which, you know, is sort of odd. And why that's important is because the Construction Contractors Board has the ability also to put restrictions on a particular licensee if they are not paying their debts. And it has been a frustrating element that I've run across, and I know many people in the industry have run across, when they're having to compete with somebody who habitually does not pay their wages, and they turn around and create a new company, get another license, and can continue to go down this road, and the Construction Contractors Board cannot refuse to issue them a license, even though they have a history of unpaid wages on them. So that's what the importance of adding the wages to the construction debt piece. And I think I'll turn it over to Craig Smith to describe the amendment to the bill, which I'm supportive of as well.
And I might have Mr. Cook. Did you want to join the panel so you're not there all
yes,
by yourself?
I didn't know if I should squeeze in here or not.
No. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, good morning, Madam Chair. Craig Smith, Construction Contractors Board Administrator, here to testify regarding the bill and with a -1 amendment. Would you like me or Mr. Cook to proceed first?
You guys know, I don't know what he's going to be talking about, so
okay.
How about if you just want to go through and talk about it, and then we'll end up with Mr. Cook.
Thank you very much. So, the Construction Contractors Board, as you know, is the agency. It's that state agency that licenses construction contractors. It's predominantly about consumer protection, but quite a bit throughout the years has added protections for Oregon workers, having to do with making sure people have workers' comp and necessarily pay their debts that are lawfully ordered not only by the board but by others. This particular bill adds some additional language. I want you to know that the agency is neutral on this bill, and we're here to answer questions regarding it. I'm happy to do so. But I also wanted to thank Representative Holvey for allowing us to and helping us prepare a -1 amendment. And I'd like to talk about that with your permission.
Mm-hmm. Please.
It was about the fall of last year when a court case came up contained in the Court of Appeals, known as Pitchard versus Noland. Now, this particular case was about a consumer who had a problem with a contractor, but it highlighted one of the important issues that we have in our law, which is the ability to hold unlicensed contractors accountable for their unlicensed activity. And so what the law, Oregon law, currently does is it encourages licensure by suggesting that not only do you have some things that could happen to you, such as fines and other things, but that you can't, in most cases, take a case to court if you weren't licensed during the work period. That's been a basic tenet for quite some period of time. It's important to general contractors as well as subcontractors. It is not easy to maintain licensure in this state in this day and age. I think we're working to try to make it easier, but the cost involved in complying with all regulation is significant. And one of our major missions in the Construction Contractors Board is to make sure that there's a level playing field. And if there's not a level playing field, it's not going to work. That's the plain fact of the matter. This particular statute that the court talked about is one, again, that makes sure that the contractors maintain their licensure. And it appears as if there was an inadvertent result or an unintended consequence in 2003 and in 2007 when the agency, the Construction Contractors Board, came before you and suggested some minor word changes to help with our dispute resolution process. We simply changed a few words like claim to complaint. It appears as if, and this is, and again, I'm not an attorney, but it appears as if that needs to be fixed. We see this as a housekeeping measure. We have talked to some of the construction industry, have seen nobody suggest this is a bad idea to me. And so I bring it to you at the last minute. I apologize for the paper, but I bring it to you for your consideration, and we're here to support the DOT 1 amendments to this bill. May I answer any questions?
Okay, thank you. Do you have any questions of these panelists before we go on to Mr. Cook? Mr. Wagner?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just going through this the bill, I had it up here. I mean, it's pretty straightforward with everything. Representative Holvey, and this would probably be more towards you because it's your bill. I'm just wondering if we added like undocumented workers to this, knowingly hiring undocumented workers is one of the deals for forfeiting licensures, because remember we had the one gentleman who had the sheetrock company that was failing lots of places, but in the testimony we were having earlier about fair wage, fair pay, all of that, a lot of that's been driven with Representative Witt and Wisnett's bill, kind of fell into that. And if we were to put that in there, it'd probably help out the construction industry tremendously. Because,
Madam Chair, Representative Widener, you know, I didn't technically think of that particular issue, but I think that that actually may already be included in this particular bill with the reference to any federal, state, local income tax laws.
Well, the problem is they're not necessarily using an I-9 or checking I-9 or Social Securities all the time, and they'll file a 1099.
Right.
For some of these.
For an employee would be illegal.
Yeah.
I can't really speak to whether this bill would cover that scenario or not. I would have to go back and ask legislative counsel if it does. It may or may not. I don't know.
Okay. But if you could get back to Representative Widener. Okay. Thank you very much. Any other questions? Okay, Mr. Cook.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, representatives, for having me here today. My name is, for the record, Bradley Cook, and I own Huckleberry Fence and Deck in Eugene, Oregon. About 7 years ago, I had a gentleman named Roger apply for. Actually, we found him through the Preferred Workers Program. At that time in the construction industry, there was an extreme demand, and it was very hard to find someone with any kind of construction experience whatsoever. We went through the Preferred Workers Program through the state of Oregon, and a gentleman named Roger applied for a job with us. And we found that he had a wealth of experience, and we just couldn't believe that someone with this kind of experience was going to drop into our lap. And I hired him on the spot, and he said to me, I want to let you know that I have child support that I owe. And I said, Roger, I've got about 15, 20 employees downstairs there, and this half a dozen of them that, oh, child support, it's no big deal. It doesn't affect your hiring. He goes, no, I want to sit down with you and I want to come clean with you. This is my story. And I listened and my jaw just dropped to the floor. He said, Brad, he goes, how often do you pay your payroll taxes? And I said, every week. And he said, well, before today, I would have only been able to work for you for 1 week. Folks like us that are trying to evade child support, we're hoping that you only claim your taxes every quarter. Therefore, I can work for you for 1 quarter. And then when you receive that letter in the mail saying Roger owes child support, then I would quit working for you and I would go to work for somebody else. And he goes, I'm not the only one. There's a lot of us out there that are doing that to evade child support. And until you're exposed to these angles, you can't dream up these scenarios of how what people will go to extreme lengths to cheat the system. And so I hired Roger, and he worked for me for about 3 years, and we've stayed on and become friends. And I talked to him just about a month ago. He said he's down to his last year of owing child support, and he's all paid up. And he came clean on the whole thing, and I really commend him for that. At that time, I had a gentleman working for me named Jason Thompson. He owns Black Diamond Fence and Deck now down in Eugene. And his work was tailing off. We called it kingdom building, whereas when you have an employee who tries to gather a couple employees together and somewhat rebel against who you are. And so Roger was a far better technical employee than Jason. Jason had worked for me for 6 to 7 years. We decided to move him into sales. From an employer standpoint, Jason is the worst nightmare that you could ever imagine, because Jason, his sales were tailing off. He wasn't getting the big jobs. He was getting the little jobs and the mediocre jobs. And we had to sit down with him one day and say, Jason, we're going to have to fire you because you're just not living up to the expectations and the wage that you're getting. Jason told me, he goes, would you do me a favor, since I've worked for you for all these years, would you lay me off rather than fire me? I said, yeah, I'll do that for you. And he goes, I've used my tools for all these years on your job. Will you reimburse me for new tools as sort of a severance package? I said, yeah, I'll do that too. And so I laid him off. Now, twice a year I go around and I collect all the bids that I've done, and I go around to see which jobs are still out there that I can still aggressively pursue, which ones I've lost to my competitors. And I suddenly found this new business called Black Diamond Fence, and they were getting all these $10,000 jobs and bigger that I had bid on. One of the jobs that I went to after Jason had left me, he was out there with his Black Diamond Fence crew. I looked all over the internet. He had no advertising whatsoever out there. How did these people find out about him? He used my customer base, is what he did. So I immediately reported him to unemployment for unemployment fraud, and they caught him. Later that year, a gentleman that I know, he called me up, Rick Allen of RB Allen Construction, says, Jason's not busy now. And I said, yeah, because he's already got all the jobs that that he scraped off of my QuickBooks. He goes, I want to hire Jason, but I don't want it to come between us. And I said, Rick, it's going to come between us. And he said, well, I'm going to hire him. And so he hired him in December of that year. A year and a half later, the state of Oregon contacts me and says, where's Jason Thompson's child support? I go, Jason Thompson hasn't worked for me for a year and a half. You should know this. He works for RB Allen Construction. If Rick's been paying him, you should have that on your tax records. And they said, we have no records whatsoever of Jason Thompson working for RB Allen Construction or this Black Diamond Fence you're talking about. And so I said, you know, their office is right around the corner. I'm going to go ahead over there and take some pictures of his truck right in front of the business, and I'll give you all the contact information for that. And so that was sent to the Child Welfare Services from Huckleberry Fence and Deck. About a year and a half ago, we found out that Jason was 1099ing himself and illegally using the license number of Northwest Cable Corps. There's another infraction. Last year at the Lane County Home and Garden Show, I had 25 bids from the show. I didn't get any of them. I usually get about a third. Black Diamond Fence was at that show. When I did a follow-up call on, just to make sure you got my bid, if you have any questions, this woman just lambasted me, saying, "I can't believe these prices that you charge."
Could you summarize your testimony? Because I have a feeling that this gentleman has not been doing good things, so I just want to summarize the testimony.
I respect that, Madam Chair. It all comes around, though. And I said, this gentleman, he only charges this much money. And I looked at it and I go, wait a minute, he has two kids from two different women. All his employees have kids. There's no way they're paying child support and taxes and charging this low of wage. So I called up the Oregon Construction Contractors Board. They went out there and I said, if they try to use this excuse that they're being run through a temp agency, just whip out your cell phone and say, give me the number and I want to confirm it. And sure enough, Randy and enforcement from the Construction Contractors Board did that, and they, all those employees out there with Jason, went, well, darn, you caught us. And so immediately they wrote out $1,000 fines to everybody out there. This is an epidemic that's going on out there, and people don't realize it. And a lot of these contractors are just chalking it up as the price of doing business, and it's wrong. And I feel as a contractor, we're not taken as seriously as if other professions were cheating. Can you imagine, Madam Chair, if you were a medical student and you made it almost to the very end to get your degree, and for whatever reason you had to drop out of school, and times are hard for you, and you're thinking to yourself, wait a minute, I got this spare bedroom in the back of my house, and I know how to do appendectomies and tonsils and this kind of thing. I think I'll do that. And for the first 6 months, you're doing great. Then when your 3 o'clock appointment shows up one day, the police kick in the door. Do you think that you're going to be on the 6 o'clock news? Better believe it, you're going to be on the 6 o'clock news. You think you're going to be on the front page of the Salem newspaper or the Eugene newspaper or the Oregonian? You bet you will be. If we're contractors, you never hear about it. Nothing's said about this. There's no accountability for it. So I'd like to thank you very much for giving me the time to speak to you about this. And one more thing I would like to add is, when I've called the CCB last year to check him out on another job, they said that this is getting to the point of harassment. And I said, harassment? This guy's been popped 4 times in 4 years for one violation or another. And so now they won't even go out and investigate him in the field. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions of the panelists?
Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. Yes, I have heard these stories. And one thing I do wonder about, even though clearly this is wrong, what happened, he was caught. I'm wondering how these proposals would stop that from happening anywhere else. What would it do?
And Madam Chair, legally, it would give the CCB the ability to say, you know, you're repeatedly breaking the law, breaking these other types of laws, and we can sanction, revoke, or suspend your license because of that. And under this bill, and you know, because right now he just can, a contractor like that can just turn around and keep working,
pays the fine
with the license, pays whatever fine it is, and they continue to be licensed to work. And they continue to do this repeatedly. And so, I mean, I think when that happens, when you have a habitual lawbreaker like this, we ought to be able to say, you don't have the ability to have a license to do this anymore. And that's what this bill does. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this bill would provide additional authorities for the Construction Contractors Board, and that's what I would say about that.
Okay, one follow-up, though. What are other, can you give me some examples of other reasons a license might be suspended or revoked or denied?
Madam Chair, Representative Thatcher, you're talking about currently?
Yes.
So to the Chair and to the committee, there is a significant number of different things that could result in a fine. Contractors obviously need to carry a proper license for the work that they do. They need to give consumers notices that they...
Real quickly, I'm not talking about fines. I'm talking about actual revokes, revocations, denials, or such like that.
To the Chair and to the staff of the committee, currently the way the law is structured, almost any of these violations could ultimately be turned into a revocation or a suspension.
Okay, thank you. Other questions? Okay, thank you very much. We have, of our large audience, we have no one else signed up. Anybody else would like to speak on House Bill 2540? Seen none. I close the public hearing on House Bill 2540. Okay, that is our business of the day. Since this is the end of the week, I actually want to publicly thank Brandon and Kate and Jan for the fantastic job that they're doing of keeping us on board, online, and organized with all of the many, many bills that we have to do. Everything's supposed to be in the hopper by Monday at 5 p.m. So.
By some emails, so there's been some weekend and night work.
Yes, there have. Thank you very much. Have a good weekend.